Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kane and Rince Sound of Play. As you may know by now, with Sound of Play, we aim to bring you an eclectic fortnightly compilation of some of our favourite pieces from the many endorphin-encouraging video game soundtracks we've enjoyed over the years. My name's Leon Cox, and joining me in this Sound of Play is Jay Taylor.
Hello.
And a special guest, a very, 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 very old friend of mine who lives in Japan, and his name is Simon Cook.
Hello. Thanks for all the old there. Yeah.
No, that was all the verys.
Oh, sorry, verys
yeah,
then.
All the verys.
It's a bit early for
yes.
me.
Yes, so we're working at a strange time here. Jay and I are recording at 11 p.m. Simon is in across the far side of the world. So one of the things we want to do with Sound of Play is make sure that we have a broad spread of eras. Actually, there's quite a lot of 80s stuff coming up on this podcast. But one of the main reasons I wanted to invite Simon on and finally do a podcast with him after many years of him listening to me gabbling on is that he and I go way, way back in terms of gaming. I think we were first at school together at the age of like 4, weren't we, or something like that, at the Annex. In Brighton.
That's right, yeah, a little preschool yeah.
place. And then we kind of knew each other and were friendly for some years until the 8-bit era came around. Well, I suppose we were already in the 8-bit era, but when you and I had an Atari and you had a Commodore 64 and our eyes met across a classroom and we fell in love over video games, or computer games as we call them then, but also the music. The music scene.
That's right, yeah. I think I still cling on to the time when you came round to my house to play sensible soccer.
Micropro
soccer. I think that's probably the only time Micropro soccer, Micropro sensible soccer, was it?
Well, it was just called Micropro soccer, but it was by Sensible Software. But it was it was 4 years before Sensible Soccer on the Amiga. Sorry to correct you, but I didn't want any of our listeners, you know, saying, but carry on.
Yeah, no, quite right. But, you know, I still cling on to that memory. I think it's probably the only time I've ever beaten you in a video game. So,
yeah, things I also remember. I mean, we've had a wangle many a time. And I also remember the devastation with which that was written across your face after we played Speedball 2 that time. I think it was like... I think I'd absolutely played that game to death, and you popped round for a wangle, and I said, "Oh, this is fun. It's like football, but with violence." And you were like, "Cool." And I think the score was something like 400-0, something like that. But
yeah, something like that. I think I sort of woke up in sweats of hearing ice cream for weeks to come.
But yes, you did used to beat me at Micropro Soccer. It's very true. But one of the things we bonded over, you had a C64, which was obviously a better supported machine than my Atari in the UK anyway. In America, it wasn't quite so. There wasn't quite such a disparity. I loved my machine. It was a powerful machine. Famously, Archer MacLean, programmer of Drop Zone and International Karate, said that it was a much more capable machine than the C64. But the C64 had all these amazing games I didn't get. But also, it had people doing ridiculous things with sound chips, and all three of your selections on this Sound of Play are from the golden era of people working out how to take this really quite simple SID chip and do these ridiculous things with it.
Yeah, that's right. It was a SID chip, so it had three channels of sound. So basically, it means obviously you can have three drums in one. And yeah, so I remember some of the first games I got on the 64, obviously very, very basic with a few bleeps and bloops going on.
Indeed.
But then as time went on, yeah, as you say, the musicians got a hold of exactly what they could do using all sorts of techniques to really squeeze a lot out of the chip.
make it sound like it was playing all sorts of different actual instruments, basses and drums. And they used this technique called interrupts, didn't they? So it's sort of playing, it was playing multiple notes in quick succession, but they was it was playing them so fast it sounded like it was playing them simultaneously. That's as I understood it.
Yeah, I think there was supposedly a glitch in the original manufacturing of the SID-chip, which meant that quite low bit samples could be created. Actually, I think the speech in Impossible Mission and Ghostbusters used that glitch. Right. And later on, the music was that glitch using samples that you'd used in some music, such as Martin Galway's Arkanoid. And then later on in Rob Hubbard's Skate or Die soundtrack, although none of that music features in this list in my selections today.
Yes, your three selections, you've gone for two from the absolute, probably the legendary maestro of Commodore 64 musical development. There were, you know, plenty of other names as well, but you've gone for, well, let's start with your first track and explain why, what it is and why you've picked this one.
Okay, yeah, the first one is by Rob Hubbard, and it's the tune to Crazy Comets, which was a game which was released in 1985 by Martek. I think it was a clone of a game called Mad Planets.
Which, yes, it was indeed.
It was around early 80s, I think.
Gottlieb arcade machine, yeah.
But a very simple premise. I think your ship could be maneuvered anywhere on the screen to shoot the planets which came in and homed in on your ship. And some of the planets were destroyed very easily, but others could take quite a bit more punishment. And after you started shooting them, they started to glow and then homed in on your ship a lot faster. And I think there was some part of the game where I think the arcade machine had some sort of floating spacemen that you were tasked to
I loved the arcade machine so much. Yeah, that's right. It had a sort of bonus stage, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And the Commodore 64 version had a similar stage. I think it was little rockets that you just had to maneuver your ship over. And that's about it, really, as far as gameplay goes. And I think as a lot of the reviews at the time noted, the simplicity of the game was actually helped by the soundtrack.
Mm.
And the soundtrack is deliciously 80s.
Yeah.
I think I remember Josh mentioned in the last issue when he was talking about Shadow of the Colossus that the tune that he picked there, two issues ago, the tune that he picked there reminded him of a certain section of that game. But as for me, I suppose partially because of the time between when I originally played Crazy Comets and because of the game's simplicity, the memories that this game brings back to me isn't really of the game itself, but more of the time playing it for the first time. I think I had a turbo loader, which meant that it loaded in about 1 minute.
Oh, so jealous of turbo loaders. The tech just wasn't available on my computer, so I was waiting 18 to 20 minutes for cassette games to load, and they would often go wrong in the latter stages. And I'll go around to yours, and you know, even if we weren't using the, oh my goodness, it's a disk drive, 1541, 5.25-inch floppy disk drive, it was, yeah, I'll just put this on to load, and then it would be like 2 minutes later, and we'd be playing, and I still hate you, even though you've actually given me a long-term loan of some of the, you know, some of your Commodore 64 stuff. I'm still jealous.
But yeah, so the quick load was amazing, and I just remember a huge grin spreading across my face as I played this as I played Crazy Comets with a friend, and I think a lot of that has to do with the music.
crazy comments there from Rob Hubbard on the C64. Next up, we have our first community selection for this Sound of Play, and it comes from stalwart friend Tom Fum, Tom Bradstock, a big Sega fan. This is also from the 80s, and it's from the arcade machine. Also came out on various home systems with various attempts at the music, but we're going to deal in the original coin up here of Power Drift. Tom says, this brings back great memories from a great game. I used to go to a local leisure centre to swim and always look forward to playing this after, with the semi-deluxe cabinet sat between the upright version of Turbo Outrun and the normal cab of Operation Wolf. I used to plough so much money into the game. I loved it and still do. Great game, great music. Yu Suzuki at his best. Good tune, great arrangement, perfect for a driving game. Should say, Yu Suzuki was the director of the game. And the man behind this this track, which is called Side Street, is Hiroshi Kawaguchi. Side Street from Power Drift there. Now something more contemporary from Jay.
So my first track is from Ninja Theory's 2010 game, Enslaved. The score was composed by a fairly well-known producer and composer, Nitin Sawhney, who, you know, has a considerable CV of film and television scores, along with, you know, games as well. He did, before Enslaved, he'd done the previous Ninja Theory game, Heavenly Sword. The weird thing about the track that I've chosen is, whilst the actual score itself is very good and has some pretty decent tracks, the piece of music that stood out to me the most came from the XMB.
You love your XMB, yeah.
Which, unfortunately, isn't actually on the soundtrack album, which I found only after I'd purchased it. But it's kind of, I guess you could argue that it's a rearrangement of sorts of a track called Redemption that is on the album itself. Yeah, there was something about this, like when you have these thumbnails sort of sitting there and this piece of music starts up, it immediately sort of grabbed me, because it's got this, I mean, it starts with kind of, I guess you could almost say, an oriental kind of string arrangement. It sounds very sort of Asian, you know, it's got that sort of feel to it. But then it's got these kind of ethereal vocals over the top of it. And I found it a really evocative piece of music. And yeah, it's just a shame that it isn't on the album.
Cross-media bar music again from Jay there. I guess that makes it a PS3 exclusive, unless that sound file appears anywhere on the 360 version or PC version. But yes, there it is. Cross-media bar tracks. Why not? My first selection is also quite astonishingly 80s. I'm very happy to have found out. I never knew the piece's name. It's from a 1987 arcade machine called The Ninja Warriors by Taito, notable for its enormous cabinet housing three side-by-side cathode ray tube screens. Of course, it was all cathode ray tubes then, unless it was a vector monitor, I suppose. It wasn't a game that I particularly liked. It was a scrolling, a fairly plodding scrolling ninja game, in the mold of something like Kung Fu Master, but with, you know, superior graphics, and you know, you'd actually fight tanks as a robot ninja and stuff. It sounded more exciting than it was anyway. Home versions were kind of weird because they didn't have the three side-by-side monitors, obviously. That was completely impossible. So you ended up with this very strange aspect ratio in a letterbox display. But all that's by the by, because the thing that I remember most about the Ninja Warriors, I never got that far into it, but I didn't much care because the level one music, which I now know is called Daddy Mulk. That's Daddy Mulk, M-U-L-K, I don't know why, by Hisayoshi Ogura of the famous Zuntata in-house band. There's some, frankly, legendary footage of Zuntata, the Taito in-house band, playing this live in 1990 on YouTube. I urge you to check it out. They're wearing shiny jackets. It's all like headless basses and multiple banks of synthesizers, Korgs, and whatever else. It's quite mind-blowing. But this piece is just a pure piece of sort of 80s action movie cheese with a very obvious Japanese sensibility, and I don't think you could, it couldn't have come from anything else other than a video game, really, in 1987. It just sounds like how that sounded to me, and I just remember walking into arcades as a 15-year-old and being lured over to the machine by hearing this soundtrack with its synthesized or sampled crowd cheers and all this. I even remember saying to my nan once, listen to that, listen to that. She's like, oh, it's very musical, isn't it? So yes, here it is. It's very musical, isn't it? Oh, Daddy Mulk. Why is it called Daddy Mulk? I don't know.
What's a Mulk?
What's a Mulk?
Yes.
I don't know. Why is it?
Oh.
Who's the daddy? I don't know. I don't know the plot of the Ninja Warriors other than you are robot ninjas. But there it is, Daddy Mulk. There's also a good version of that to be found that was, I think it was a SNES, the Ninja Warriors was a kind of enhanced version of the game that came out like 7 years later. And there's a different mix of that track. But there you go. Which brings us back round to our guest, Simon Cook. And another truly legendary name from the world of video game composition. Doesn't do much these days for video games. I don't think he was ever much of a gaming fan. He just happened to be a genius.
Yeah, this one is from the game Bionic Commando. The composer is Tim Follin. Bionic Commando is from 1988. It's a multi-directional platform shooter. And in the game, the player has a gun of some description and an extendable arm. It's one of those games I remember the graphics being pretty indistinct in parts, but
on the again, C64 the soundtrack, they were, yeah.
On the C64, right. But the soundtrack, again, more than making up for it. The tune here is from Stage 1. Has some really nice effects and sound design going on that I really enjoyed at the time and even now. Many of the tunes on many of the levels were just over about a minute long, but they loop really well and really drove you on to finish each level and to finish the game.
So this was in the era, this Bionic Commando conversion. It was, it was a coin-op first. I think it was 87, a Capcom coin-op, which looked quite different as you'd expect. And I think it was in the era when the sound designers of the home version would sometimes just go off freewheeling in their own direction. I was actually, before I'd seen the tracks you were bringing to this podcast, Sire, I was very close to picking, and I will in a future one, Tim Follin's breathtaking Amiga Ghouls and Ghosts music, which in the game itself is an interpretation, an Amiga-ized interpretation of the incredible original music from the Ghouls and Ghosts coin-op, composer which I can't remember off the top of my head, but one of the great Japanese arcade composers. But this title track it had over the sort of a track mode was just this complete, this folk odyssey that Tim Follin had come up with and just amazing in its own right, definitely to be featured in a future show. He and his brother used to do stuff together as well, didn't they? I've forgotten his brother's name.
Yeah, I think they did
Ed Follin.
Gauntlet 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think they did one of those.
Anyway, he's still around, but I don't think he doesn't do much for video games these days. Our second forum request, as posted at kanarince.com/forum, is from P-Tier. He wants a piece from the mighty Azel Panzer Dragoon RPG, better known in the West as Panzer Dragoon Saga, from 1998 by Team Andromeda, for Sega, of course. The piece in question, this is either Latin or it's in the made-up language of the game. Sora mi areru ek sankitu. And the soundtrack to Panzer Dragoon Saga is by Saori Kobayashi and Mariko Namba. I don't know whether each track was a collaboration or whether it was some and some. But I love the game. I love this piece of music. And PTA says, slow starting song that builds into something special from one of my favorite games that is criminally underplayed, though for obvious reasons. Stuff there from Kobayashi and Namba. Sora mi areru ek sankitu, possibly, if that's the pronunciation. But yeah, love it. Panzer Dragoon Saga. Jay, your next selection.
All right, the next track I'm bringing to the table is again from the XMB. Now, this isn't me just being lazy and looking at whatever, but it's just, it's for whatever reason that it's always the stuff that hits me first. Whenever you put a game in from on the PS3, it was always the stuff that would sit there, and it'd be the first thing you hear, along with the little thumbnail. It's always the first thing you hear from the game itself. And sometimes, you know, when there's been a bit of thought put to it, it's some of the music's really, really good. And so this is, and because it's not, I'm not distracted by anything else within this music. It's like, such as gameplay, you know, this stuff tends to resonate a little bit more with me in particular. Maybe it's not just me. Maybe there's other people out there that feel the same way. I have no idea. Either way, the next track is from, it's from a game called Wet. Now, I will hold my hands up and say I have never played the game.
Mm.
I played the demo and hated it, and played it once, never again. However, I did keep this demo sitting installed for quite some time, and that was mainly because of this piece of music, which fortunately, unlike Enslaved, is actually on the soundtrack album. Okay, so the track is called Desert Slaying, and it's composed by Brian LeBarton. Thing is, whilst the game may have come across, certainly to myself, as a really sort of crass cash-in with the whole Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, grindhouse cinema thing that was going on at the time, the soundtrack's really good. The thing about game scores is, you know, just because a soundtrack's really good doesn't mean that the game needs to be great either, you know? So you can get this thing where, you know, it's the same for great games might have terrible scores and vice versa, but this is a case where I felt the game was really substandard. However, the score was, you know, really impressive, and it kind of stands to some extent on its own. Certainly this one track I felt was really strong because it's a particularly striking piece of music, you know? So, yeah.
My second selection is in celebration of the much anticipated, finally announced 3DS version of The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. It's been in the works for a long time, I believe since, I think, Grezzo is the name of the team that did the 3DS Ocarina of Time and did a rather successful job. And they've been working on this ever since, in the last good 2 or 3 years, I guess, by the time it comes out. The original game, of course, came out in 2000 with all its millennial angst present and correct for the N64. There's a lot of music I like from this game. It is often referred to as the kind of the weirdest, the darkest, the creepiest Zelda, and I think that's absolutely spot on. And this music really sets the scene. It starts off almost sort of pastoral and genteel, but with a slightly sinister edge and a melancholic undertone. But by the end, it just goes into full horror. It's absolutely terrifying, and that's what I like about it. It's such a departure from so many other Zelda games and games of its type that it's one that I'm guaranteed, if I ever load up Majora's Mask on whether it's the original cart, which I don't have anymore, but on Virtual Console or the Collector's Edition, I will sit there and listen to this a few times. I nearly selected the achingly beautiful Astral Observatory music, but it's under a minute long, so seek that one out yourself. But yes, here's Koji Kondo and the title screen music for Majora's Mask. Always instills a shudder in me, that one. Unlike this, which is much happier fare, I would suggest, from Simon's final pick on his Sound of Play debut.
Well, I don't know about that, actually. This one's also quite creepy. It's another Rob Hubbard tune. Mm. It comes from the game The Master of Magic. I remember picking this up at my local newsagent for £3, which I think was the standard Mastertronic price.
Mastertronic added dimension price, yes. Mastertronic was £1.99, but the MAD label was an extra pound. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And this was actually my first adventure RPG, although it was pretty basic. And it just kicked my ass repeatedly for about the 6 months that I tried to play it. Until I eventually got round to sitting down and finishing it off. The top left of the screen had a top-down view of the action, a character controlled by a joystick. The top right of the screen showed text detailing what was going on. Then there was a center part of the screen, which was the area where you selected what you wanted your character to do and how you wanted to interact with things that you came across. And the bottom half of the screen had some art showing the things that you were collecting or killing and that sort of thing. As for the soundtrack, there's actually quite a number of Rob Hubbard's tunes which were inspired by a number of artists. And if you listen back to some of those originals now, the similarity is actually quite striking. He did an amazing soundtrack for the game Delta, the Thalamus release. And a bit of that is from Philip Glass's Koyaanisqatsi.
Yeah.
And this tune, The Master of Magic, is actually inspired by a track by a group called Synergy. I think it's an 80s kind of...
synth pop?
More... what's the word? New age kind of synth pop, yeah. I think it's from... I never actually heard the track at the time, but it's on their album called Audion. And actually from the same track, there's a... from the same album, there's a track called Ancestors, which is basically Rob Hubbard's soundtrack to Zoids. which is, of course, at that time, there was no kind of the big knobs in the music industry weren't listening to C64 music to see if their music was being ripped off or not.
Yeah, it was very easy to get away with copyright theft back in these days. Whatever happened to Zoids, by the way? They were a toy range, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's probably 80s as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, but this this track is, if you listen back to the original, it's obviously, you can hear the inspiration of it, but it's not a direct copy. And I really love the arrangement and the sounds that are used in this piece. And the game was quite atmospheric. And I think, again, as I was saying about the tracks that have come before, I think that the sounds and the arrangement, basically the composition of this track, is really unique and give really add to the atmosphere of the game.
So before we hear from Rob Hubbard one last time for this Sound of Play, just to remind you that this podcast is not just about what we and our guests like. So do remember to venture over to the forum at canarince.com/forum and you can request your favourites. We'll endeavour to get through some of these in each podcast from now on. Don't fret if we've gone past yours in terms of the post. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're never going to use it. It just means that it wasn't right for that particular show. So it just remains for me, Leon Cox, to thank Jay, of course, who's also doing a wonderful job on the production, I'm sure, and to thank my old friend and our guest Simon Cook from Japan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, lovely to have you on finally. You've got nothing to plug, have you?
No, I don't. I stopped listening to your podcast actually since you stopped using my music for the intro music.
Oh yes. Long-term followers of our output will remember Simon's Gamer Dork theme tune or tunes. Was there more than one?
I think. I did some sort of little jingles now and then through it.
All right then. Here we go. Let's leave them with some more classic Rob Hubbard and The Master of Magic from 1985. See you next time on Sound of Play. We'll be right back. Thank you.